Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Jimmy, the trash ships, the trash cans, Conrad, alongside Billy Big Timer, Charlie Davies, who I don't know where the hell he is. Looks like he's in a special trailer for only A-listers, and Hollywood Heath Pierce, who's a little, I'm going to say, a little disappointed that Chuck is getting more of the Hollywood treatment than you, Mr. Heath Pierce. Anyway, we have a game, U.S. Men's National Team. We're going to recap it against El Salvador, big 1-0 win, which means they booked their ticket as the number one seed in the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals, which means because Mexico could only muster a 2-2 draw against Jamaica at home, they're going to play each other on June 15th in Las Vegas for one of the semifinals, and that is going to be a cracking affair. Very excited about that. And then, of course, if you're watching on the YouTubes, hit like and subscribe. Tell a friend how great our show is. We'd really appreciate that. If you're listening to it on your podcast platform of choice, make sure you download, follow, leave a 5-star review, and you also, we're telling you right now, go tell somebody, and we're up for an award. We're a finalist in the soccer category for the Sports Podcast Awards, and we need your help, so please take a minute out of your day to vote. The link is in the description, and I don't know if Charlie needs any more acclaim, but he would appreciate, I mean, just a little bit more to continue to validate how special he is as a prognosticator. And I say this, Chuck, I'm going to give you the floor first, because you said that Daryl DK should be cleaning the shoes of Ricardo Pepi in the preview show. He shouldn't start. I said DK should start. DK started, didn't do much with the 60 minutes. That's what happens. Didn't take his chance. Pepi comes in 2 minutes later as a sub, scores the winner, and now it's Ricardo Pepi time. So, Chuck, go ahead. Take it away. It's all about you. Go ahead.
No, I didn't. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that guy. Me? No. What I will say is the reason why I was so adamant about Ricardo Pepi continuing to get the opportunity was just because he earned it. He's deserved it. He showed it with his play, his movement, his first touch, and just his decisive runs in the box. The reason why he scored that goal was because when Weston McKennie picked his head up, he was playing off the back inside shoulder of the defender, which sets up the run because the defender has to check his shoulder. And when he checks his shoulder, that's the signal for Ricardo Pepi to take off into that space with a bending run. For a midfielder, if you pick your head up and you see your striker giving you that lane with that intention, saying, give it to me now, then you play the ball and it's there for you. So it's all set up by the run. And once he gets into that space, you've shown one, he's got enough speed. It's not world-class speed, but enough speed to get in front of the defender. Two, the strength to hold off a Dominguez, the center back who was strong for El Salvador, who gave Daryl Dike a tough time throughout the match. And three, the clinical finish. It's the light chip over the keeper. I know Heath loves Pepe's finishing game. You've talked about it ad nauseum. So for me, I think Pepe just showed it with his play tonight.
Okay, so Heath, I'm going to throw this to you. I put out a tweet after he scored going, I still can't believe that we didn't take Ricardo Pepe to the World Cup.
Shocking.
It is still shocking, but you were first. One of the first, at least for us in our circle, you were first. You were the conductor of the Ricardo Pepe hype train. And I want you to take your flowers because he is really coming good. He's now scored 6 U.S. men's national team goals. It's the third youngest to ever do it behind Christian Pulisic and Jozy Altidore. He clearly has something, and it showed tonight, because even if he should have scored maybe another one, good deflection, first touch to set up a second. I mean, the goalkeeper made a great save. He was feeling it, and I think he had something to prove. I don't know if it's just going up against Daryl Dike or if it's also all this noise about Balogun as well. And go ahead, take your flowers. Let's talk about Ricardo Pepe with you.
No, I like Charlie. It's not about taking flowers. I'm just happy to see somebody. I take him on Twitter. Like I'll go all day long with the haters on Twitter around that stuff. But on here, it's mostly just about the fact that, again, you see there's little, it's not even like an, if you know, you know. If you watch quality football or quality soccer, you can see something in Ricardo Pepe that you don't see in all of our players, right? In the same way that we look at Sergiño Dest at times when he's in form and you go, man, there's something that you don't always see, right? You go out to a park, you watch U15 game and you see like of a high level tournament, you'll see somebody that just catches your eye and something, you feel something, right? When you watch him play. And he's got a little bit of that, his movement, first touch, his confidence. He's still lanky and like, it's not like there's like, it's not like watching Mbappe play, right? Like there's still things about him, but there's just little things that I like about him, and he's got a long way to go, but still that, whether it's a chip on the shoulder, whether it's learning from not making the World Cup team, whether it's this adversity he's going through, I just really like his response, his attitude, and more than anything, just how comfortable and confident he looks out there in and around the goal.
Jimmy, okay. I want to give you your flowers first before we do
I'll
go.
Take them.
These are dead flowers though, Jimmy, because you didn't want Pepe on the field.
I didn't want him on the field. I just thought that DK deserved
withering flowers.
He deserved the chance to start with the first team, and he got it, and he didn't make the most of it.
Yeah, well, I didn't say there were roses, but I got some weeds here
from Charlie.
Yeah.
What I appreciate and love about us is that the fact that we can say however we're feeling about a certain player, about tactics, about a coach, and we're challenged. And it's not just, okay, you can say that and it's out there. It's, why do you feel that way? Give me some evidence. And we, all three of us, can say, this is why we believe it, because we've been on the field, we've shared it. I value all of your opinions. I love the fact that you say, all right, why? Why? What makes him different? And why should he get it versus DK? And I know you just wanted to see DK get an opportunity because he scored goals in the English Championship. He's finally in form. He's healthy. But I think what we saw tonight and the last game, he came in as a sub, was largely ineffective. Wasn't involved. You can say, oh, everyone's selfish, whatnot. Today he gets the start and was largely ineffective. Pepe came in as a sub in a game against an El Salvador team who is very disciplined, organized tactically. You know, whenever you play against El Salvador with Hugo Perez, that it's going to be a game because he really prepares for his team against the U.S. Comes in and, thank you very much, delivers. And for me, that's the difference between the quality of these two players.
In some ways, and I appreciate you saying that, and that's one of my favorite parts of the show too, is that we can have meaningful conversation about how we're feeling and what we want to see from either particular players or as you said, the tactics of the team overall. For me, I guess I was using DK as an example there because all of us benefited from getting that one opportunity at some point. Like, we got an opportunity. Sometimes it's due to injury. I got into the team because Eddie Pope was hurt, or initially I got in because Danny Califf went over to Europe to go, or you know, leave MLS and go to Denmark or wherever he went. And that opened up a spot for me just to get into camp. And then from there, as you start to work your way in, you have to get an opportunity at some point. And I just thought that DK needed that when he was informed, when he was scoring goals, and he got it with the first team. There were 7 guys that started tonight for us that started all 4 games of the World Cup. It's not going to get any better or look any better. I know that We don't have Tyler Adams. You know, maybe some guys are in a little bit of a different spot or having different asks. But if he can't perform around that type of talent, then to your point, maybe he just doesn't fit in with this group. Maybe he's better suited playing with West Brom, where he is, where the style suits him a little bit more, built around him, as opposed to it seems like our style is built around some of the other players. And that's fine. But Ricardo Pepi comes in and makes an immediate difference. And I think it might be a while for Daryl Dike gets another start. But he got his chance. He got his chance. And I think
that's all I was looking for.
And he didn't make the most of it. Okay, cool. Then we got to move on, but we have to move to figuring out, okay, you're not the best fit for us at this particular time.
I will say, and we've all experienced this, right? This is the other hard part about a game, of how fluid a game is. In the second half, the U.S. is playing far better, far more, much better, with much more urgency, much more just sort of like emphasis in what they wanted to do. And you could feel that momentum shift from the start of the second half, right? And when you're Daryl Dike, you're like, man, we were just getting going. And we've all been in that situation before where you come off and you're like, dude, this was a dud of a first half. Second half is better. Game's opening up. Obviously, El Salvador can only keep that discipline for so long because they do need to go out and try to get a result at a certain point. So maybe they play a little bit more stretched out to try to get to the semifinals. And that opens up that space for Dike, right? For Pepi, if you're Dike, you're thinking through that lens of like, man, got shafted again, to be honest, right? But he didn't do anything in the moments.
I've been there. Yeah. I've been there.
But you
get replaced and the guy scores who took your spot.
But take the goal away, right? If Pepi didn't score, I still would have liked how active he was. And it's the things that I like about his game have far little to do with his natural finishing ability, because I do think he's good, especially now that he's confident. It's the fact that almost every time he checks off, he plays simple. He checks off, he brings the ball down in tough areas. He brings other players into the game around him. And I'm going to keep on saying that until people realize that those are aspects of his game that are different than other players. Mm-hmm. He doesn't slow down the speed of the attack when the ball comes to him. He keeps that pace going. He has a rhythm to his game and a confidence in his first touch and bringing other players in that I just really like. That if I look at that half or the 30 minutes that he did, I don't know if he lost the ball at all, you know, other than like trying to create goals. He lays the ball off. He know like time and place, and he seems to understand that at a really young age, which I like.
Well, let's talk about the first half, because, and this is hardcore analysis for everybody, it was poo-poo. It was not good. And I think what's interesting, and what I was thinking about when I was watching the game was our, like, if I'm snapping my fingers in terms of pace, it's just too slow. Right. Mm-hmm. And we needed to pick that up. And we did at the end of the second, at the end of the first half, a little bit more urgency. Weston should have scored on that set piece, the header. I think he thought he was going to get some contact, and Alex Roldan just decided not to touch him at all. And he heads it wide. But I just feel like we lacked a little bit of that. And that was addressed immediately. Also, I thought that Gio Reyna was playing a little bit too deep. When he picks up the ball that deep, I just feel like he's not as effective as he can be. We need him in a little bit higher, a little bit more connected to the nine, whoever that may be. Or if Pulisic comes inside, he can find that space. And that's where he found a good ball, where he did combine with Christian, got it back, and he ended up hitting the post at the start of the second half. I'd like, that's where I feel like Gio's a little bit more dynamic, when he can just stay in the fringes and pick his spots as to where he wants to go. And I just thought maybe he was a little bit too deep in the first half. That's maybe what the game was dictating. I thought we played into El Salvador's hands a little bit. I think they were really well organized. I don't want to take anything away from Hugo Perez and his team. I think they saw what happened with Granada, that we just got overrun on the left side for Granada. And so they addressed that. But I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on the first half, because, as I mentioned, we had 7 World Cup starters out there, and it just looked a little disjointed. And Charlie, I'll come to you first.
Charlie, you go ahead. Before you talk, though, can we acknowledge Charlie's home and away form in terms of his outfits? He's got his gold Daytona on. He's got a little bit of that flavor to him that, you know. Oh, look, he just showed it again.
He showed his watch and just flexed it.
Wow.
Flexed it again.
Like, that's when I know Charlie's like home Charlie, and this is Charlie's away kit is like, oh, he's got something going.
I'm surprised he doesn't have like an Emmy award or something in that little spot there in the corner.
I'm just shocked that
for a trophy.
I'm just shocked that CBS and Paramount Plus bought him this Madden cruiser that takes him everywhere, and he's able to just basically sleep in this.
Ah, there it is.
Oh, man.
Here we go.
Oh, wow.
He's borrowing somebody else's trophy from whatever trailer he's in right now, but it's looking really good. That green one is fantastic. Yeah. Chuck, talk to us about the first half, though, because obviously the second half ended on a high note.
All right. Keith,
here we go. The slapping.
Jeez. Charlie's got one arm that's 6 inches longer than the other because that watch is so heavy. Hey, those win bonuses were good back in the day, weren't they?
Yeah,
took care of you. I like that.
Clearly.
No, what I will say is we both know, all three of us, that when you play against El Salvador, when you win the ball, you have to be direct. There has to be an aggression, and you have to score early because their whole game plan is to delay, and then they recover quickly. They get numbers behind the ball. And you're playing against Hugo Perez, who's very tactically aware of how to expose the U.S. and how to make it difficult for the U.S. So you saw early in the first half, they said, Tim Ream, we're going to invite them high up the field. We're going to sit back, and we're just going to play long balls in behind. We're going to test his pace. We're going to see how fast Miles Robinson can cover for him. That was the game plan. And it worked. It was pretty effective in the beginning because the U.S. would come up for it. Then they'd be like, oh, we got to all bust our butts back to get behind the ball. I think for the U.S., it was too slow. When you took an extra touch, then you allowed two, three El Salvador players to get back. So we saw in the first half, if you're not playing quick with intention to get goal-to-goal directly, which I know the U.S. players talked about, oh, we can take our time. We don't have to rush. There's a time and space for that on the pitch. Against El Salvador at home, you have to go and score quick. That is how you break them, because then you force them to come out. And if they can keep it close for as long as they did, you're really suiting El Salvador. And they had some quality chances. Had they had
Matt Turner had a save there, like 2 minutes in again. Yeah.
If they had a capable goal scorer, one that was really a top-notch striker in CONCACAF, this could have been a different game.
Okay, and Heath, how about you? Because there's a really fun fact about our record against El Salvador, and it's pretty ridiculous, where we have the longest unbeaten streak against them than any other opponent in our history, which is 22, 17 wins now and five draws. So despite them kind of giving us a hard time and us kind of just getting slim victories or results against them, we don't lose to them more often than not.
No, and that's the matter of, like Charlie said, you come down to those moments where there's just, at times, they even got advantages in the second half where you see them attacking with equal numbers or even numerical advantages, and it kind of just falls flat, you know? And I think there's a lack of that next level of quality within that squad right now. But if it wasn't for a lack of that, like Charlie said, it could be a different game, you know? There was a few kind of wake-up moments for us that I think shouldn't happen in a game like this, but... Again, second half, very different than the first half. First half, just as Charlie mentioned, really flat, kind of lackluster, not on the same page, not a sharpness in passing, not an urgency to like sort of be sharp and combine. And just a rude awakening from like obviously playing against a Granada, which there's going to be gaps and spaces and everybody's confident and everybody wants to do better. That was just a good response in the second half, I think, which was a great as a sort of response from the first half going into halftime, second half. Great response to start the half that way, but not what I expect from this team and the quality that they have in the first half. Just not really, really disappointing, because there wasn't one player that I could have been like, they were good in the first half. It was just kind of flat.
Yeah, collective. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about Daryl Dike. He was one of the new starters in this game. Let's talk about Alejandro Zendejas, another attacking player, got the start, scored against Granada. Went really well taken goal. He had a couple moments early on where I thought he had a couple good dummies that kind of broke Sergiño Dest into some space, but not as effective. I mean, busy, trying to do some things, but not as effective. So I'm going to go to our resident hunk over there with like his $15,000 watch, Charlie Davies, and talk to us about...
Well, my guy doesn't do 15. Come on now.
Sorry, I didn't see all the diamonds on there.
Jeez Louise, 15? Yeah, 15 when he bought it like 22 years ago. You know what I mean? Yeah, you had inflation to that, Charlie. You know what I mean? Got yourself a little mortgage on your
Zendejas.
Rent.
Let's talk about Zendejas.
He's that clearly appreciation's not... real.
Yeah. So Zendejas, does he earn the next start? Do you feel like... It's just Gio Reyna that needs to be in that spot. Taylor Booth came on a little bit later. You could see a little bit of what makes him go, and he's got some ideas and takes some risks, which I like. But let's focus on Zendejas right now.
Yeah, I'd say Zendejas as a whole, and I'm looking at both matches, first match and second match. If you're grouping those together, it's encouraging because he's different, and you want flexibility, you want different ideas for different opponents. This is probably not a player who's going to start every single match. But in terms of, oh, we need a winger who can come inside to offset the other team and unbalance the other team, then, yeah, I like that. He's good on the ball. He's confident. But for him to be effective in this match, then you need Sergiño Dest to be really high up the pitch because he comes inside. And Sergiño Dest, we saw, looked rusty. I mean, he got himself in good spots, but he wasn't as decisive as we saw last year. He wasn't as clean as he was last year. I think he would have been a little bit more aggressive going to goal, getting to the end line, whipping balls in. That was not what we saw from Sergiño Dest today. And I think the lack of him and his fitness and his form, I think applied to Zendejas a little bit today, because if he has to break down two, three El Salvador players and the blocks, they were in deep blocks. It's not as easy as a Granada who's unorganized, rushing all over the place, opened up. That plays into his hands. I would have liked to see him take a little bit more shots today, because if you are playing against a team that's sitting deep, the one way to get them to come out a little bit more and create some more space is by taking shots. He had a nice goal against Granada. And in this game, I think it would have suited him to take a little bit more shots and be a little bit more proactive when he was in possession. I think he deferred a lot in this game, and that was because he's playing with Christian and Gio Reyna, and he wanted to make sure that, like anyone coming into a new team, hey, I know you guys have been here for a while. You guys can make decisions. Let me add value and not so much take the initiative. I think that's going to probably change in the future as he gets more comfortable and guys get used to how he plays. But this is a player that deserves to be in the group. You can see that. But as far as a certified starter, like I said from the beginning, he's not a guaranteed starter in this team. And you look at Aronson, you look at Taylor Booth. I know Booth probably still has a little ways to go, but Aronson's another player. And then Timo Weah is another player. So there are a number of different players with different qualities that I think ultimately will make the group better.
I think what's interesting, and I'm going to use Zendejas as an example, but I think this goes for all of our wingers. I don't know if I see them, and now I'm thinking specifically about Zendejas. Did he connect any passes to DK? Was there any looking into that passing lane to see if it was on? Maybe it wasn't on, but I don't feel like, and I know he said this a few podcasts ago, and it's still sticking in my frontal lobe here, that I don't know if we do a good enough job of bringing our attacker or number nine into the attack consistently. And that pass, what I think would allow that to happen a little bit more often. All right, we'll talk about that.
Before you say anything, I know you just said that, but my rebuttal to that is, look how long it took Pepe to get involved in this game.
Sure. And a good entry pass from Weston McKennie. That's from a central midfielder, but I'm still, from our winger perspective, I feel like that pass is on sometimes, and I don't know if we're looking enough for it. Now, it's not always on the wingers. Sometimes it's on our striker. I remember there was one movement where I saw DK, who could have run into the space, one of the outside backs, or the other center back had stepped up, and he didn't. And I could see the frustration. I don't know who was on the ball at the moment, but they could see them being like, dude, make the run, and they had to play it backwards. And I could see everybody being a little bit frustrated with that. All right, we're going to take our first break of In Soccer We Trust. When we come back, we're going to let Heath talk. So don't go anywhere.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, you and Soccer We Trusters, if you like us, you're a fan of the European game, as well as your domestic league or wherever you like to watch the beautiful game. Make sure to check out another great pod then in the CBS Sports Podcast family called The House of Champions with our friends Ian Joy, Fabrizio Romano, Nigel Rio-Coker, Michael LaHue, James Benn, Jonathan Johnson, and they're unpacking the biggest games and storylines from the top five leagues and the greatest competition on earth, the Champions League, and beyond. House of Champions has you covered, so go download and subscribe to the House of Champions podcast anywhere you find this one. That would mean a lot to us, like giving us a high five to our little brother. I don't know if I said little brother, but we're probably the little brother in that whole thing. Anyway, welcome back to In Stock We Trust. I'm Trash Canned, along with Hollywood and Chuck Wagon, and we are getting after it. We're talking a little Alejandro Zendejas in the U.S.'s 1-0 win over El Salvador. They get the top spot in their Nations League group, which means they've booked their ticket to the semifinals, and they just happen to play against Mexico. That'll be June 15th in Las Vegas. That will be very fun and very tasty affair for sure. Heath Pierce, we didn't let you talk about Zendejas, but I also want to get kind of your player of the match in general. There was another one, Miles Robinson, who's making his first appearance for the national team in over a year after he tore his Achilles. And I thought he was fantastic, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. So I'll let you decide who you want to go with after I hear your thoughts on Zendejas.
Oh yeah. And did you see that little gold hand Charlie travels with? You know, it says two, because that's the amount of strikers Charlie wants to see on our national team on the field at all times. And in case of emergency, break this, and it's like play with two strikers, you know, have more players in and around the ball. But no, I think obviously I'd love to give it to Ricardo Pepi, just because you come on, you make an impact, you score the goal. Generally, mm-hmm. we know who a sponsor is going to give that to. And I thought he was really impactful of just continuing to create that attack. I thought it took a while to get Christian Pulisic going. I thought both left side and right side kind of struggled to be on the same page. And we've seen that a lot in our national team of finding that rhythm, right? You watch club games and you see a little bit of that timing of like when a winger comes inside and a fullback goes high, and just that constant of just changing the angles. In that case, I like Robinson. I like the shout. I thought the center backs are both good on the night, at least on the ball, but I have to give it to Ricardo Pepi. Jimmy, actually, I have a question for you.
Okay.
To send it back. You know, Charlie said this at the top of the show about, oh yeah, we can disagree with each other. When you were talking about Miles Robinson not making the 22-man or 23-man roster for the last game, right?
Yes.
Sitting out, and you're like, well, they must be saving him. I thought you were insane. I've never, ever experienced where coaches completely just save somebody. Like, generally, I would have at least thought, okay, he's in the squad. You don't play him, but like he gets a little bit of that feeling again. And then maybe you play him the next one, but you had him, either you had some inside information or you had a guy go from not in the squad to starting in the classic, like save his legs type of thing where you're like, no, he could save his legs on the bench, but at least he's experiencing being in the lineup.
Listen, never, I think I was the only one of us. Heat. I was the only one that also called Daryl DK starting this one. I don't have any insider information.
Yeah,
I guess I was just.
Yeah,
I was very excited.
Heath was the one having coffee with the coaches. Right.
You know what? I can't confirm or deny if I'm.
Well, yeah. When I said that on the show, Jimmy already knew because those coaches were texting him saying, hey, I ran into this guy, Heath Pierce, or something like that at the coffee shop. And Jimmy's like, yeah, I know the guy. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised to see Miles start, especially with this team, with a lot of experience and guys coming off the World Cup and that kind of trust from Anthony Hudson is important. And I thought what I liked the most is that he grew stronger as the game went along. He started to win all of his one-on-one battles a lot more cleanly, not only win them, but when he won the ball, then he'd make a nice pass forward. He started to eliminate the safe pass, unless that was the only one on, and try to define those ones that would break the lines.
Jimmy, rank the center backs in order of the past two games.
Ooh.
Ooh, ask me about the fullbacks next. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is a good question. So for everybody that wanted, because Chuck's audio is like, it's like you're in an echo chamber or like a cave.
He's just in the Madden Cruiser. He's fine.
Sorry, he's in the Madden Cruiser.
It's literally moving right now to his next destination. You know I mean? We talked about having
his
own driver. Now he's got his own motorhome driver, which is nice.
You can't even tell that it's moving. That's how clean and smooth that is.
Oh, I know.
All right, Chuck. So Chuck says, rate the center backs over these last two games. Tim Ream is solid. The guy is so just quietly good, and his passing is excellent. I actually like Miles' defending better. I'll throw that into the mix.
Now, last game, Trusty was the better of the two.
Over McKenzie, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that these two tonight played a better opponent and were a little bit more solid than the other two. So I would probably go – I really liked Miles tonight, but maybe my bar was a little bit lower because we hadn't seen him in a while, and I haven't caught too many Atlanta United games. The one that he missed, they gave up four goals, which really kind of speaks to his influence, especially in the back line, or five goals or six goals. I don't know how many goals they gave up to the crew. But, I want to say Miles first, Tim Ream second, Trusty third, and Mark McKenzie four.
And then outside backs for Heath?
Ream first and Miles Robinson second. Like flipping a coin. But I was just really happy to see Miles back and such a force that when you see him playing that way, like, what would Heath look like if he had been healthy and playing for us at the World Cup? I don't know. Heath, what about outside backs?
No, I mean, I know where you're coming from, Jimmy, because it's really hard. Like you have to judge it on a handicap based on the opponent, right? Because fullbacks where you're like always like today they were tested more in areas where you had to be sharp. You had to play quick. You had to have ideas, but I expect that from our best fullbacks and neither of them did that. So they fall on the depth, like based on this camp, based on performances, I've got Scally and then I've got Scally
Reynolds
is number two. Again, I thought he has a long way to go, but just Dest in terms of it's really hard to take the bias of like what I know he can do versus what he did. He wasn't bad, but like just doesn't look sharp. And obviously,
no look pass and it got cut out in the middle of the field.
He did do another no look pass though. That was pretty sick.
It's the high risk, high reward guy. And I love that about him. But,
this one was just like a simple combination play up near the top of the box. But, And then Jedi Robinson just looks tired, to be honest with you. He's been on the grind.
Slow.
Yeah, he's been on the grind. He looked slow to react, slow to get forward. He almost rarely saw him bomb forward in the way that he did before. Just sort of almost what I liked about his game generally was not today, but he usually pins back a winger, forces them to have to defend really early on, right? Chase him constantly. And if you're a winger, that gets annoying after a while where you either got to start cheating forward. Or if he's winning that battle, you got to play honest and track him back a bunch of times. And that usually sets that battle on good footing for him to win that 1v1 battle. But he just kind of looks tired, a little bit off the mark. And we've seen him over the last couple of months just sort of look like he's struggling to find the rhythm of the match, of the game, of the moment. And his passes are off and someone's running diagonal. He's playing it inside or vice versa. And those sort of things. He just sort of looks off a beat that looks like he just needs a break. So they both dropped in my book. So I'm going to go with those other two.
Interesting.
We gave up a goal
against Granada. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, we did. But like, you know, it's a hard thing to judge like game to game.
I get it.
Two completely different matches.
Sure. But. Sure. All right, let's skip midfield for now. We'll do that one collectively. Let's go to the front three, Charlie. How would you rank the front three in these last two games?
Yeah, I don't think Christian had a great game today, but he was phenomenal in the first one. Obviously, you look at the opponent and the tactics of the opponent. So, Pepe was good. So I'm going to go with Pepe as one, just because as a striker, your main responsibility is to finish. And
three
make
goals
runs.
In two games.
So he's one for me. Pulisic is two. Three is Zendejas. Four is Aronson.
Ooh.
And then, I guess Gio Reyna is an attacking midfielder. Today, in the second half, he was much better. But largely, you know, you felt like he was carrying the pressure with him. That's what it felt like to me because there – The moments that we saw in the second half today, you're saying, I need that more often. You have it in you. If you want to do it, it's very simple. You can do it. Just take over the game. You have that ability. But it feels like he was just kind of cruising. He was getting, you know, wasn't really giving it what that position needs from him. Mm-hmm, and for me, I'm always going to have my expectations for him super high because we know how good he can be and how good he is. And, you know, it's similar to Christian. Sometimes it's unfair that you're that you have that much quality. But at the end of the day, you need to deliver. And we just didn't see enough of Gio Reyna's ability over these two matches. Now, obviously, these are just two matches, but we need to see more progress from him. And I hope the next round, which is going to be most likely against Mexico, he shows up and we see that second half in the first 10 minutes that Gio Reyna every single time.
Yeah. I'm what about DK? So DK is what, bottom on your list?
Yes.
Yeah. And Taylor Booth, now like no rating, didn't play enough, I guess, would kind of fall into
Yeah. I mean, he'd be slightly above DK. So,
oh man, DK.
Taylor Booth does look like he's got something in him though. Like you see little tiny touches and things like that. And if you watched it again, I'm judging more off the club than his camp, but like DK just looks like, again, people ask like, is he not international quality? I think he'll always, as long as he's scoring goals, he'll be knocking on the door of this pool. Cause you always need a different dynamic of strikers in your pool. You can't have them all be the same type of striker, but you know, he's got a ways to go. I think
what you're trying to say is, as long as you're scoring goals with your club, you'll be a candidate for the group. But when you say international quality, that's a difference maker. That's somebody who can step on the pitch and not just play against CONCACAF opponents, Grenada, Cuba, Dominican Republic, El Salvador. We're talking can play in a Copa America against an Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela, and have success.
Yeah, sound like you're talking about me, man. It's crazy. I don't know. This quality. Like, sounds like a left back that did like 35 games with the national team, played in some big tournaments, like that kind of guy. You know, like that consistency. Most capped in 2008 type of guy. You know what I mean?
I feel like Jordy Pefok just took a stray right now. I don't know.
Jordy Pefok. But I think what I'm trying to say is that it's not that DK is never going to be international quality striker. It's just right now he has a ways to go to develop into that player. And it's one thing to score goals in the championship. It's another thing to be an effective striker with this group. And the qualities that is needed as a nine in this group is to be able to make runs to open up space, to be able to hold up the ball, but also to sense when a striker needs to get some touches, build some confidence so that, you know, the center back has to come out now and follow you because you can run at some players. Also, play some balls into the channels. Like being able to be diverse and different and not so one-dimensional. And for me, DK is all one-dimensional right now. That's not saying he can't be multi-dimensional and a threat in different ways. But right now,
Chuck doesn't like Daryl DK. I think
I know
that's Chuck, what he's saying.
Almost Chuck hates Daryl DK's. If Chuck had a t-shirt on right now, it might say that. The truth is like we are critical of Daryl DK, but let's not forget about the player pool that we have at striker position. Pefok was indifferent in a lot of performances, right? We saw Ferreira indifferent in a lot of performances. Ricardo Pepi indifferent in a lot of performances in big moments during qualifying, right? We saw a number of guys that were just indifferent, completely indifferent in terms of their impact on games consistently, which is why this conversation is still going. You go back into certain other generations, you had your striker at least, you know, might not be the guy, but it was at least a separation from the others to know like who our strikers were.
And that's why we all want to see Balogun come to play for the U.S. That's why everyone is so hyped about Balogun, because he has all of those different qualities and he's scoring it in Liga, which is a super difficult league. He's among the top goal scorers. So to have that type of player along with your Ricardo Pepis and your Josh Sargents and your Jordy Pefoks or Haji Wrights and Daryl DK's, you have a number of different options, but this is an elite striker with a high ceiling and someone that's a game changer for this group.
Well, I can't wait till Balogun commits and then he has an indifferent performance with you too, because you guys are just going to lose your shit. No. Like, what does this Balogun guy do? I can't even connect with these guys. Can't even hold the ball. What are they doing?
I'll be like this.
All right. Hey. So before we move on to our second break, let's talk about the midfielders then in terms of who stood out. Yunus Musah, Weston McKennie, Luca De La Torre. Johnny Cardoso had a cup of coffee there at the very end against El Salvador, so he won't be rated, but I guess we have three to choose from. How are we ranking those guys? Weston McKennie scored 2 goals. Should have scored again tonight. Didn't, but had the assist to Ricardo Pepi. But had some moments of maybe being a little bit out of position, maybe trying to do too much. That's what I love about him, though. You don't want to take what he loves about the game away from him. But if you are filling in at the 6, or if you're trying to do a different position sometimes, less is more. That's what I would say there. Yunus Musah.
The best midfielder.
Yeah, Weston was.
Yeah, Weston was.
Yeah,
the best.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's got the numbers to back it up too. Yunus, I thought, was quiet. He came over to Anthony Hudson like 16 minutes into the game to like either get some water or get something. I was like, oh my God, Yunus Musah's on the field. I didn't even know he's on the field.
There's a couple times when he gets the ball and
I get it.
Technique and confidence on the ball when he looks at 3 players defending in front of him and goes, I'm going to go past you, first of all. And then I'm going to go to the next guy and I'm probably going to beat you. And then I'm going to find the next pass. You're like, oh my God. That kid's got something insane in terms of his ability to just explode out of in and out of tight spaces. But what I will say on the midfielders is that we should probably be looking into our pool of players right now, figuring out who is our next number 6. Because if Tyler Adams is not always available, I do not think we have a solution. I'm going to chuck a name out there. If you've been watching Major League Soccer so far, Aiden Morris, probably the best 6 in the league right now, young player. And I think he might not be there yet. But I'm thinking through that right now about who's the next 6, because we need somebody coming through. I think we've learned through this pool of players that you cannot just drop a 6 is a specialty position now, especially in the way that we play, that we need somebody. And it's not De La Torre, and it's not Weston McKennie, and it's not Yunus Musah. It's a different type of profile. And again, I don't know. I don't think we have that right now.
Okay. I agree with you. I think that is definitely a big conversation to have. And we should get one of the coaches on. Maybe invite them next time you go to coffee, Heath, and see if they'll come on the show. Chuck, what are you saying? I'm feeling like you're going Weston, then Luca De La Torre, then Yunus. Is that where you're leaning? Because I thought De La Torre was good, solid, no problem.
Didn't play
the Granada game. It's so hard for me to evaluate that one because it's just...
Because
the pace of that game was so slow. And when he played safe... That pissed me off a little bit. Like, dude, you can break the line,
But Luca plays pretty safe also now. Even when he advances, he still ends up playing the ball square, even if he moves the ball.
Well, there's some value in that if you're trying to keep it a little bit. I like at times we're not always in a rush to hit the home run pass, but there are times where I'm like, dude,
he's the guy at the poker table that checks every time it gets to him, dude. Just like, you know what I mean? Like, put some chips in the middle and let's play.
Is he a check raiser? Check. Yeah, check raise. He's a check raiser.
Yeah. I'll match.
Okay. Yeah, I'll match.
I'll go McKennie as number 1. I think over the past 2 matches on being available and dangerous on set pieces, the pass to Ricardo Pepi, there were just some good tackles he made. For me, he did well over these 2 matches.
Yeah,
now, of course,
when you compare it to the other 2, it's pretty clear.
Yes. I think Luca De La Torre would be number 2 just because we know how good Yunus Musah is, and he was very underwhelming for what he can be. Given that, there are still those moments where you go, that boy is special. That boy is special. But
not saying that about Luca De La Torre.
No.
He's solid.
He's a good player, but he's not he'd always be, if you had a midfield trio, he's always that third player. He's not the attacker, he's not the defender. He's just that player who can keep possession, who makes good decisions, who you don't really have to worry about, but he's not going to win you matches. And he's not going to save you matches in terms of making a huge recovery run. But what he is, he's going to add quality. He's going to keep the ball. He'll be able to switch the point of attack. He's a cerebral player. But I think over these 2 matches, that would be my ranking for the trio.
Yeah, I like that. He's the connective tissue. And I think that's an important role. We need those guys on the field too. It helps balance out everybody else. All right, we're going to take our second and last break of In Soccer We Trust. When we come back, apparently Brendan Aaronson sat down to do an interview, and he has some thoughts about Greg Berhalter. You don't want to miss these, so come back and join us right after this.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, in soccer we trusters, don't miss a second of action from the greatest club competitions on earth, the Champions League and the Europa League, and maybe one day the Europa Conference League. And follow the biggest stars from the world of soccer like Vinicius Jr., Victor Osimhen, Erling Haaland, Marcus Rashford, and Angel Di Maria as they try to clinch continental glory. Stream every match from the Champions League and the Europa League, and maybe one day the Europa Conference League. Live only on Paramount Plus, so you can try 1 month free with promo code ADVANCE. So go make that happen. The promo code is ADVANCE. All right. Welcome back. Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce. And I teased that Brendan Aaronson had an interview where he said some things about Greg, and it was a tease because he actually didn't say much at all. Here's his quote. "I can't say much about the whole situation, but I think Greg was amazing for the time that he was here. The record doesn't lie. I think winning two trophies was huge for the team, and he had a really great thing with the group, and he was really good for the guys. But listen, I can't say much, and whatever happens, happens, like I like to say." He should run for office, Heath Pierce.
Yeah. Good political answer. I think, he does have solid stats, and you can't deny those, but there also isn't like a, you know, I think you're obviously seeing some different perspectives of players, and I know some of the rigidity and expectations, I guess, of the players made it a pretty big challenge at times under Greg in terms of the intensity that he wanted, the way he wanted to press, things like that. So you can see why certain players are interested in maybe another coach or another option. The question is who? That's the hardest part, is like, you know, I am lacking confidence in the ability to go and get a sporting director, a GM, and a coach. That are going
span.
and not even in a 3 month span, but that can get to work right away.
I heard Julian Nagelsmann is in Chicago right now.
You're lying.
He's still lying. I mean, he'd be younger than Tim Ream. I don't know if that would be the right shout. Oh, maybe Tim Ream can coach this. All right, here's a quote for you from Brendan Aaronson, Chuck. He said, "It's been ups and downs." This is on his post World Cup form. "It's been ups and downs. I think that maybe the World Cup didn't help me that much because I didn't play 90 minutes each game like I was playing at Leeds. I understood that. I knew my role at the World Cup, but I think that it might have slowed me down. I might have even been tired from it at the time because I flew 15 hours home after the World Cup and only had 5 days off and then had to go back and report to Leeds. So that was pretty tough. I haven't had a lot of time off, so it's been hard, but I think it's only making me stronger and only making me better, and I think I've become mentally stronger because of it." There is something to be said about that post-World Cup tournament or any kind of big moment in your life and coming down from that and not really having the time to process all of it. I think if I'm reading between the lines, underlying message, that's what it feels like a little bit, Chuck.
Yeah, that's exactly what we said, that the World Cup took a lot out of him because he was playing with this confidence early with his days at Leeds. And then you go to the tournament and you go from playing in the Prem where coaches are saluting your performances, that you're, you know, known as a guy who's active and getting on the ball and causing problems, you're scoring against Chelsea, to not playing in the World Cup. That can't be any more deflating as a young player with the potential and the upside. And you go back to your club, no vacation, all the travel, and you're a little bit depressed. That takes away from you. It takes a while to get out of that funk. But the way he's handled it, first class. Because the only thing you can do is just put your head down, keep working, and hopefully get out of that situation. And it seems like right now he's finally finding his feet again. So that's been good to see. I got nothing but positive things to say about Brendan Aaronson as a player and a person.
Yeah, he seems like a total pro. And not that that's a big surprise for us that have been around him, but it's one thing that's to say, oh, I can handle bad times. It's another thing to actually walk through them and handle them with the type of class that he's showing both at the club and national team level. Good that he scored against Granada. I think that's going to be good for his confidence, Heath Pierce, but maybe not as effective tonight. He did have some counter-pressing that he won the ball and ultimately set up an attack for us. But outside of that, it still feels like, what's his best position? And I think I say that for both his club and the national team. How do we get the most out of him in a way that really plays to his strength so he can get back to being confident? Because when we have a confident Brendan Aaronson on our hands, we've got an excellent player.
Well, similarly, I think we're building specialist type of players, right? I don't think Brendan Aaronson is going to be our star in any system. He's not going to be our big player in any system. He is going to be hugely beneficial in certain systems for us. And if we're not going to play those types of systems, then he's probably not going to be, I'm saying this where he's at now, right? He can certainly climb and become better and better and better at other parts of his game, which we know he's continuing to do, considering the leaps he's taken from his Philadelphia Union days. But he is a player that's strongest assets fit within a certain type of game. And I think that's as a winger. I think that's in a counter-pressing team, a team that presses high up the field. Now, whether that translates to a national team, who knows? But at the club level, you can look at a Brendan Aaronson and you start to go, well, what's his next club? You could predictably say the type of club he should probably go to next, right? If it's not a Leeds or whatever, it's going to be similar to that. It's going to be similar to energy drink soccer, you know, that the counter-pressing type of game that exists out there. And so I think him as a player, he's a fantastic player. Now, whether or not that translates to how we play in the national team, I think is TBD long-term because of the type of player he is. And we have a number of players. Sergiño Dest is another one that we talk about all the time of just going like, does he fit? Are we going to play to his strengths, or is he going to have to play straight up in a national team differently than perhaps he would play at a club team that maybe has possession all the time, or, you know, where, I mean, he's not even making the 18 or the, you know, the whatever now at his club team level. But I think those specialty types of players don't necessarily translate to automatic starters in our national team anymore.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see it all plays out, especially we got Timo Weah on our hands, who's another player who's playing left back or right back for his club team in France, but obviously has been an excellent winger, scored a great goal against Wales in the World Cup to prove how efficient and effective he can be. So it'll be interesting to see whoever comes in and coaches us in a more meaningful way than the interim job that Anthony Hudson is doing at the current moment. Let's evaluate Anthony Hudson then really quick before we talk about the other CONCACAF Nations League matches and any other final thoughts that we have for today's show. Anthony Hudson, Chuck.
Give him the job. End of discussion. Give him the job, Jimmy.
Come on, Heath. Come on. You can't give him the job.
Change my voice so it sounds like
No, you can't. You can't give him the job.
Let's quote Charlie as saying that, though, when we go
on the internet. Yes, let's get that. Let's clip that and let's overdub Charlie's voice.
Yeah, so,
Chuck, Anthony Hudson, obviously in the January camp, didn't win a game. But in two games here, Granada, I expect that. El Salvador, obviously, we have this tremendous record against El Salvador in general. But he put out a pretty good lineup. But if we're just looking at El Salvador, I thought he made the subs at the right time. Obviously, Pepe comes on and scores right after, has an immediate impact. Your thoughts on Anthony Hudson?
I think he's doing a great job as a caretaker. As an interim manager, I think he's doing a great job. I'd say January camp was probably one of those times where he's learning as the first time.
Charlie's giving him the stepdad vibes, dude. Just like, you know, he'll never really be dad, but like, you know, he's doing a great job playing the role.
He got me some ice cream and I don't usually get some.
I'm keeping it real. So I think it was a learning curve for him being the boss in January. I think he took a step forward in this camp. The first game, obviously, just inferior opponent, but took advantage of it with the right lineup. And I liked how he wanted to make tweaks. And in this game, second half, the team need to respond. He got them to respond because that's his job. Get the energy up, get the team to play a certain style and way. So I think from that standpoint, you have nothing to say, but we all know this is an interim manager. This is not a full-time manager. This is not someone who is going to have the job long-term. That's just not a possibility. So you're waiting for the best option. I think what, if anything, that this tells us, you don't have to rush to hire someone that could be not the right choice. You can trust him to keep this program moving forward, even if it's not the lightning pace that we want this group to be making, but to keep them moving forward until we get the right manager.
I guess one of my questions then would be, and I've got two here for you, Heath, and for everybody else that's listening, drop us a follow on Twitter as well, ISWTPod. Is when I think about Anthony Hudson and just his job and caretaker manager, at what point do we want to start to really take this next cycle seriously? Like, we need to start establishing an identity sooner rather than later. Obviously, we got to hire a coach, but when does that become critical? I assume the summer, because we've got some pretty meaningful games coming up with the Nations League and the Gold Cup, a good chance to be immersed in the group and have some time to be around the group in a meaningful way, which you won't get once the European season starts again, and it's harder to get around the guys over a longer period of time. So that's one. Second, Heath, against Granada, there was a lot of talk from certain players that Anthony Hudson's letting them play free in the attacking third and letting them try things and being more creative. Clearly a backhanded shot at Greg and maybe how systematic he is in trying to play a certain way. But against El Salvador, a team that was a lot more organized than Granada, I felt like we needed maybe some of those ideas, like a mix of that freedom and having some of those parameters where it's not just, let's just figure it out on the fly. And it felt like maybe we needed a little bit of coaching, and we got it at halftime because it showed. We just had a little bit more urgency. We had Gio a little bit higher. We started to unlock them. They got a little bit tired, and we took our chance and we win the game. But I wonder what that sweet spot is as we go from like, hey, total freedom and no freedom at all. And can we find it? And do we have the group that can solve that in real time when things aren't working? Like finding that plan B if plan A isn't working. Sorry, there's a lot of layers to that. You can just run with it.
I would say again, like adopting certain games that are part of the modern, certain systems that are part of the modern game now is different to the national team, to the club team, right? Club team, you can work on it every single day in the way in which you want to, you know, I did the Houston Dynamo game last weekend, and the way that they press, you can tell that they spend every day working on a press, whether they're in a high block or mid or a low block. And that's hard in the national team, right? And the national team has a completely different level of egos and players playing in different types of system. A club team, you can build it how you want it. And I know we have specialty type of players, and eventually we're going to have to get to that point, but you also need quality players on the field. I guess my question goes back to both of you. I don't ever remember feeling in any national team coach that I had that I lacked. Like, yeah, you, it was always sort of a pessimistic mindset in terms of like being disciplined and being organized was like the number one factor, right? At least from you and I, Jimmy, from a defensive standpoint. And then there was like pick and choose your moments, but it was set in like a smart system versus, you know, maybe being super, super rigid, like where you're not allowed to go forward as a fullback or whatever it is. I always felt that, you know, again, I think that maybe Greg did try to take it too far and make it too rigid, you know?
Okay. Charlie, any comments on that? I mean, there's a lot of shouts in the chat for Hugo Perez being a potential candidate for us. I think he's shown, obviously he's coached a lot of our youth national teams and he's in our National Soccer Hall of Fame for all the great work he did as a player. Really special player, by the way. I wish YouTube and social media had been around when he was going. I think we'd be looking at him a lot different as a proper legend that he is. Yeah. And we've had him on the show before, and he's said some very insightful things. Do you feel like they should at least listen to what he has to say about what he could do with our full national team? Because there is something. He's getting a lot out of that group in El Salvador that makes him difficult to break down.
Well, I think he should be a candidate for sure. But more importantly, this is a coach and a former player who should be a manager in Major League Soccer.
Mm. Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love to see him do that.
This is, I think, the next step for him. And if he had success in MLS, then he'd be, I think, a real candidate to get the U.S. Men's National Team job. But it still boggles my mind that he's not one of the first names linked to a job if there's whether a manager is shaky. You know, for instance, Minnesota has been a team that's, I mean, Kansas City, I know Peter Vermees just signed an extension, but they're not looking like they're going in any positive direction. So you're looking at some of these clubs and you're saying they could really use a new manager. Miami, another one that I think Hugo Perez could do a terrific job in, especially if you're talking about some culture, Latin culture. Hugo Perez is your man, someone who's proven, who can develop young talent and give them opportunities. It's a no-brainer. So for me, it's more of a Hugo Perez should be getting MLS jobs, and they should be coming at him, flying at him, and let him decide which one makes the most sense. But in terms of U.S. men's national team, I don't know if he is the one, but certainly a candidate considering the people that have been talked about being linked with this job.
Hey, Heath, I don't know if you picked up on that, but Charlie just called Phil Neville a gringo. All right. Now, the other Nations League games that are going on, from what I understand, U.S. will play Mexico in one of the semifinals, but the other one's still up for grabs. We have Costa Rica hosting Panama. Costa Rica has 6 points. Panama has seven. So Costa Rica has to win tomorrow night to book another spot in the semifinals. Panama just needs a draw to make that happen. And then you have Canada hosting Honduras. They're both on 6 points in their group, and Canada just needs a draw, obviously, to go through, and Honduras needs to win to make that happen. So we could have a Canada-Costa Rica semifinal, or we could have a mixture of any of those four teams, but pretty exciting times. And I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm excited that we got Mexico, not only in the Nations League, but also on a friendly. That's the next time the U.S. are going to play. It'll be April 19th. It'll be a friendly, and that will be a lot of fun.
That's a non-fixture date, though, right? Like, that's
yes, I believe it's going to be MLS-centric or domestic-centric players in that one. So we're like flip-flopping January camp to Nations League to friendlies to Nations League again, and it should be interesting to see. That's a conundrum for Anthony Hudson as we continue to develop and broaden our player pool. All right, final thoughts, Chuck. You know what? Out of respect for your glorious watch and this trailer that you're driving in right now, I'm going to come to you first on final thoughts.
I'm just happy to be here.
Run for office. When are you going to run for mayor, Boston, dude? When is that happening?
We got the job done. We're in the Nations League semifinals. So
job done.
I look forward to that.
Two games, two wins. Heath, what about you?
I'd like to start a campaign for this group. And everybody who watches our show to get out to the Nations League semifinals and finals, be there in person
in Vegas,
you know, in Vegas, maybe hit the tour on the Gold Cup as well. Like, we just bring a big old army with us everywhere we go and have a good time.
Let's go.
That would be pretty sick. I would be all for that. So we're going to leave it there on that high note with Heath, who's trying to will all that into existence. So let that happen. We're talking to you, producer Dez and producer Alex. All right, we're done. Thank you for listening and watching in Soccer We Trust. As always, we'll see you on Thursday for the next show as we talk about even more stuff that we like to talk about. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. See you then. Later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.